Chelsea might not be on because she's en route between Nevada and here. I don't know if anyone saw that.
Right.
Did you? Okay.
Right. So you have a voting quorum right now. And
Okay.
so I'm going to turn out while the recording is going right now. So if you want to get started,
It
it's up to you, or if you want to wait. But I'm going to keep diddling with my machine while you're talking.
Okay, well, I think I'm going to go ahead and open. Are you okay with that, Matt Cookie?
Yes, I'd like to.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and open the Boulder Town Planning Commission meeting. Today is Thursday, March 11, 2021, and it's 6 o'clock. And we'll go ahead and start by approving the agenda. Does anyone have any comments on the agenda?
No, I move
And
to
make a motion to
yeah.
approve it.
Okay, and so look, Matt made a motion to accept the agenda, and I'll second it, and then we can all vote in favor.
Okay, Cookie,
Aye,
I.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Matt
Oh,
voted against. Aye.
I think. Yeah, okay, I heard that. Yeah, I heard Matt vote. Okay, so we'll move on to approving the February minutes. Can I hear a motion to approve the February minutes?
I move to approve the February minutes.
Second that.
All in favor?
Matt Cochran, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Okay, so we'll go right into the discussion with Lee Nellis. Did everybody get the memo that was sent out today from Lee? Okay, I
Yes,
did too.
all the questions, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll go ahead and let you follow up with this, Lee, because we all
Okay.
have copies.
Excellent. Well, it's good to see you all. I want to do two things tonight. I want to talk about the specific standards for specific types of uses, starting with campgrounds. And then I want to spend some time getting us lined out on the discussion of housing, because that's going to take months. And I think if we start slowly now, we will work our way into it in a good way. I could have started anywhere in the questions that we had about specific types of uses like guest ranches, campsites. I started with campgrounds because that's the longest and most complicated piece of it, the way it stands in the existing ordinance. And once I got into it, I realized there were some kind of important questions for you guys, and maybe some things that you might be surprised about once we talk about it and those standards. So the first thing that happened with those standards is that they repeated, although not exactly and not always accurately, some of the language from Chapter 8 about how you get a conditional use permit. And so in the future version of those standards, all that procedural language is going to go away, and we're going to rely on Chapter 8 for all conditional use permits. Okay. And we need to work on a few things in Chapter 8, including the notice of hearings. But as far as the standards go, all that procedural language and all the definitions come out. And that way, we're just looking at a set of standards that will have its own checklist, just like the checklist that we already have for commercial development and home-based occupations, right? So we'll
Okay.
be working in a consistent format where everything goes the same way. Now, once I started reading the standards, I came upon some things, some of which are pretty minor, that are redundant, but not always redundant in a very accurate way, and some things that actually I think we really need to think about. And I'm just going to start with the big one. The The standards, the way they are written right now, say that you have to have 5 acres to have an RV park. And then they say that you are allowed to have 5 units, 5 RV spaces, plus possibly 2 tent sites for every 5 acres. Now, the way it's written is that basically what it says from a practical point of view is that you're encouraging people to have a 25-unit campground because they would have to have 5 acres. They would want to maximize the number of spaces that they have on 5 acres of land. And so that would be 5 times 25. And then plus you could have 10 tent sites on there. So you could end up with 35 camping units, 10 of which are tent sites, the remainder of which would be RV pads. And when I thought about that, I thought, does Boulder really want that big of a campground? And it's not up to me to answer that question, but the way this is set up, what you've done, and I don't know that anybody did this thinking it through or intentionally when this happened, what you've done is given people an incentive to build a pretty big campground. If that's okay, yeah, then that's okay. Not up to me to judge, like I said, but it seems to me that my vision of things in Boulder might be more like 5 or 10 RV spaces tucked into the trees somewhere rather than a 25-unit campground. And so...
And Matt...
Go ahead.
Can I...
Yeah.
And Matt, you were kind of helping with that too. And that, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's not what the intent was as far as taking that 5 acres. I'm pretty sure that's not what the intent was maybe with when you guys were putting that together.
Yeah, no, it's something to think about. And I think
yeah.
Lee's right. The most important part, and I think we may have sort of missed it, is that as of now, the RV campground is in commercial only. It had been designated in GMU, which is, I think, why that went in there. But as a commercial only, I think that's a reasonable thing that it could be smaller.
I just felt like we have such an emphasis on keeping things in scale and compatible with the ambiance or the atmosphere of Boulder, however you want to describe it, that on a Boulder scale, unless you really bury it in the trees, 25 RVs is a lot. And it's easy for me to imagine someone building an RV park there and having it fill up for a good part of the year. And right now, the other thing that is true about these standards, and again, I'm not suggesting one way or the other, you're very generous with tenancy. A person could keep their RV there for 6 months.
Okay, so it could become a full-time thing. So yeah. I'm just writing these down. These are questions, and I sure would like to discuss it with a full PC rather than just 3 of us. Mm-hmm. But so one is coming up with a number for the minimum acreage, and 2 is coming up. Is there a standard camping?
There are layers of standards. You know, yeah. There's a profitability standard. They say that profitability starts at about 10 units per acre, which is twice what you allow. You don't have to be guided by that, but the way I think about it in trying to assess like what the visual impact of it is, right? And what you would see is that 5 units, 5 RV pads and 2 tent sites per acre, you'd end up covering less than half an acre with the roads, the pads, the stuff that served that. So you'd have a huge amount of open space. And that kind of cuts both ways. If you spread the RVs out, then you've got, you know, shiny plastic and metal objects all over a large tract of land. If you bring them together, a little denser. But the thing that I think is, I guess the question I have for you is it a minimum acreage that's important to you, or is it a minimum or is it a maximum number of units? Okay, you got me?
Yeah.
Okay.
In my mind, I mean, I'm in my mind with, you know, it's maximum number of units actually. So.
Yeah. See, that's why this really rang a bell with me when I read it. Is like, I don't think this is what they meant.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, this was all crafted before we went through the commercial standards and before we moved stuff out of GMU. So I think we were trying to protect that space.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is that we have to just work through these questions one thing at a time and visualize what we're seeing. And I guess my reaction to it is that a minimum lot size isn't nearly as important as some cap on the number of units.
Okay.
Now, you could have both, right? I'm not saying that you can't have both. I'm just saying that in terms of the impact on the town, it's probably the number of units that is our first concern. So I would like to have you guys who are here with us tonight think that through, and then next meeting, hopefully we'll have more of the commission and try to arrive at an idea about how the standard might read. Because however we go through it, I don't think the standard you've got there now is the standard you want.
Yeah, no, I think Lee, what you're doing to go through all these questions, lay them out, then we can converse in between and come up with some hard answers next round would be the right speed.
Yeah, you know, that's the big one, is the minimum or maximum lot size and the number of units, a maximum number of units or at least a maximum density of units. There are a couple of other questions in there that have to be asked as well. One of the things that I think is just purely practical is that the way this is written, if the owner of the RV park was going to live at the park, this would require that their residence and the office of the park be in the same building.
Okay, I saw that. Where was that?
I forget which number item it is there, but it's fine. And
I think it is.
I saw that.
J as in Judy.
Okay. And if you want to leave it that way, I'm not going to have any objection. I just think as a practical matter that it's pretty easy for me to imagine on, say, 5 acres in Boulder that someone would have their home on the same parcel as the RV park, but somewhat separate from it, although it's still on the same lot. And then that the office, the headquarters of the RV park, so to speak, would be a separate building. And so I don't know why you would require them to be the same building, but it's up to you. I think you need to decide what makes sense there.
All right.
So there is something of an internal contradiction down further along the list of standards where it talks about water and sewer utilities. And I don't know that there's any like philosophical or impact on the community reason to deal with that. I think we just need to clarify the first part of that standard says that you have to have water and sewer service in accord with the health regulations, and the second part of it reads with a may. And
repeat that. The second part reads what?
That you may have hookups.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And so I think we will probably want to resolve that in making them required and just consolidating those two sections.
Right.
I saw that one too.
Yeah. I mean, there's also some stuff about the roads in the park that is addressed like in, I think, three different places that can probably all be consolidated into one statement, that they need to be hard surfaced and wide enough for people to maneuver. And so those things all apply specifically to campgrounds. Most of it is, you know, the thing about the roads is mostly clarification. It doesn't really change your intent. at all, as near as I can see. But I believe that we need to consolidate those, make them more concise, more understandable. The final part of it that I wanted to mention to you tonight, and then you guys can have this as homework and think about it, and as Matt says, discuss it, and we can make some decisions even in a month. The landscaping here overlaps quite a bit with the landscaping that we have in the overall commercial design standards. And I'm not even sure we need landscaping in here anymore, given what the commercial design standards say. But you want to maybe give some thought to that. And the question that would arise, I think, that's a fair question is, do you want the setbacks to be bigger for RV spaces than the regular setbacks in Table 2? And if you do, then that affects the landscaping.
Okay. And is there a reason you're thinking the setback should be bigger? Is that a standard?
No, I'm not advocating that per se. I'm just saying that if that's the reason what's there was written the way it is about perimeter landscaping and these standards, then we would need to think about the setbacks changing.
Right. If the commercial standards cover a lot of this, which I think they do, then it seems to be sort of a moot issue.
Yeah, for landscaping, I think they do. Now, the other question about this, and this just has to be for you guys who thought about the intent, I could read the perimeter landscaping or the perimeter screening standard in there. It says something like you have to have perimeter screening and then you could have complementary trees.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I could read that to say that a screen would be a fence or a wall and then you'd have trees with it. And it doesn't define it well enough to say yay or nay to that reading, right? And so I don't think you guys would have thought about it having to have a wall or something, but I would like to know if there was some specific reason why it was written exactly the way it's written so we can address it that way.
Do you think it was maybe considering generator noise if we decide that we're going to allow generator? And I wanted to ask while we're talking about it is, how long can one of those big RVs go without having to charge up their generators?
If the park has electric service, they can go forever. Don't need to use the generator at all.
Right.
And so one of the options we have here when you combine the things we're talking about is to say, hey, if they're required to have electric drops, which not all RV campgrounds do, but if they're required to have electric drops, then generators are pretty much a moot point. If you're not going to require them having electric service, then we probably need to switch what it says about no generators to some type of operating hour standard, because you can't keep one of those big rigs running even for a whole day, basically. People have so many gadgets and stuff in them without running the generator for a while. The real solution to that is solar. I mean, I have solar on my trailer, and so I don't need to worry about the generator thing, but not so many people do.
So do you have any idea, Leon, or I don't know anyone else, like when I think over to Escalante and whatnot, is it like unreasonable to require electricity at an RV campground hookup?
I don't think so, Matt. I think it's a good idea, actually, because then it ends the generator question.
Right.
Noise.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, people will charge a little more for the space if they have an electric drop, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the people who have the big rigs and need the power, want those drops because they don't want to run the generator. And, you know, a lot of people with small trailers don't really want to pack a generator around with them.
Even somebody in a tent wants electricity anymore because of their phones.
Right. Well, they want to be able to recharge.
You know.
So I think that if you are willing to do it, that requiring an electric drop with each space is fine.
Okay.
It ups the, you know, one of the things it does indirectly is it ups the scale, you know, the scale, the quality of the park. And that means you're likely to have a park that is in other ways more compatible. And so I don't have any issue with that at all. It adds, it depends on where you go. I mean, I've traveled quite a bit in RVs and the prices vary a lot. The electric is just going to be what it is in Boulder and that'll be your choice. So I think it's okay to leave. I think it's okay to take the permissive part of the language about water, sewer, and power out and just say those things are required at each space.
Required, yeah.
I agree.
Hey, since I was part of the committee to begin with, can I make a comment?
Please.
You bet.
I believe that is an excellent idea. Number one, if it's going to be in a commercial area, the people around you, the businesses around you are not going to want the generators on all the time. So being that it is in a commercial area, I think it's a very good idea to require the electrics and everything that is required for a regular RV park, mainly your electric, sewer, and all that.
I agree with Judy. And if you're tent camping at an RV site, you don't have insulated walls for those generators. So.
Right. No, you don't.
There's just a lot of issues right there that would be curbed, I think, if you required it. So
I guarantee you that the walls of my trailer are not thick enough to keep the sound of a generator out, much less a tent. So I think we've made some progress right there. And that's all that I wanted to do was get us started on those questions tonight. I think the lot size and density thing is a pretty important question for us to get right.
And and I'll, so for the PC and those who aren't here, I'll make a list of, I think there are about 7 questions and get them out to y'all tomorrow. So we're clear on what we're going to talk about next month and can make some decisions on those.
Yeah. I'd like to just mention about the lighting, whether you require lighting. Does that happen with, is that should that be a special thing, or would that just be required when we say we want all the services, the electric and?
Well, no, the way lighting is discussed in here, it would not be the same as services to each of the sites. It would be about like street lights within the park, and it would be covered by the overall commercial design standard.
Commercial, okay.
Language about lighting. The way it's written here right now, it says that you're supposed to look at the lighting standards in the zoning ordinance, and the lighting standards in the zoning ordinance are voluntary.
Yeah, we should correct that and just go with the dark sky.
We're going to have to, but I think we can rely on what we've already done in the commercial standards. I don't know that we really have to add anything new that we haven't already dealt with for that particular part of the questions.
So we can just drop that number, whatever it is,
I think
5
so.
Or something. Okay. So.
The only reason you wouldn't drop it is this, and I'll run this idea by you and you can decide what you think. You could have, I don't think this would happen, but I suppose you could have someone who built an RV park and didn't provide any illumination for like people who are walking to the showers or whatever. And that would be, that's a potential problem if they don't light the place up at the minimum level for people to move around at night because they may be going to the restroom, showers, whatnot. And so I suppose that we could say that it has to be illuminated well enough for you know, nighttime safety, which is not very much light. But that's the only thing that wouldn't be covered by the standard that we've already got in the commercial design standards.
So it wouldn't necessarily be overhead lights. You could have those lights that are just small along the trail, like trail lighting or whatever, however you would.
No, a lot of RV parks, in fact, do that. They have the walkway lighting that just puts light down on the path. And that's really all that's needed to get people to the showers or whatever. You don't need overhead street lamps.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think we need a public telephone either. Just wanted to add that.
That
sort of dates when this thing was written, right, originally.
It does. Somebody copied from something, that's for sure. Okay, I'm feeling like we're pretty good here and we can take this up again in a month and maybe make some decisions about where it's at.
Great, yeah. Thanks, Lee.
And then we'll get on to the next piece of the things that you you wanted to work on, like guest ranches and so on. But this was the obvious one to start with, just because there was so much already in the ordinance about it.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine, and I'm talking to the PC here, that we just go one thing at a time, wrap it up, move on to the next thing.
Yep.
And we don't quite have it prioritized, but a lot of these things hold the same weight in my mind at the moment. So.
Well, I don't think it's going to take us so long that we have to worry too much about priorities. If we do what you're saying, which is just take them one at a time, I think we'll we'll be done in 3 or 4 months, and that's it.
Okay, great.
That's how I see it, at least. So I wanted to kind of warm us up for talking about housing. And I think that's going to be a long and potentially controversial conversation. I'm going to try to share some slides with you here. Let me see if I can. Yeah. Okay. Can you guys see my slides?
Okay. Housing basics. Yeah.
Yep. There we go. Yep. Okay. I just wanted to work through this in an abstract way, not with respect to anything that has happened or may happen in Boulder, but just to say, okay, let's get into what are the big questions here. And really, by the time I've gotten through this, I think we'll be at the point of saying, okay, what's the starting point? Okay. And then once we have the starting point, and we may need to debate the starting point for a while, and that's fine. Once we have the starting point, then talking about what we can actually do is a bit easier. So I wanted to go into the general plan and talk about what's in the general plan, so that we have some clarity about the goals, the way they've been stated so far. And clearly, as we discuss this, if you guys think we need to amend the general plan, then we will. Okay. And early on in the general plan, there's a set of general community goals. I think there's 11 of them, but however many there are, number 10 is to maintain diverse community structure. Went too far. Got to go back there. Maintain diverse community structure by creating housing opportunities for seasonal workers and low to moderate income individuals. Okay. We then go on through the general plan. We'll cover it all before we talk about these goals. There is in section 7 of the general plan, which is the section about land use, this statement about affordable housing. It says an affordable housing plan was adopted by resolution in 02. I have not seen that document. In that document, strategies were suggested for implementation in the zoning ordinance. The plan recognizes the need to promote the development of affordable housing policies to cater to the needs of low-income residents and seasonal workers. So basically, it's just a repetition of that other general goal. Then we get in the final place where the general plan talks about housing is Chapter 8, which is titled Housing. And interestingly enough, does not go back to these bigger goals. It talks about the things that I've listed here, that housing however, whatever should be compatible with the character of the community. It talks about programs to improve the condition of existing housing. Those would be like weatherization programs or other public assistance programs to help people make their homes more energy efficient or in other ways better. It talks about equal opportunity housing, which is kind of a standard statement about we don't discriminate, right? You guys have all seen the standard. We don't discriminate for this. We don't discriminate for that. And then it talks about having adequate infrastructure without being too specific, but about having whatever services and facilities housing needs. So that, in a nutshell, is what the general plan says. And I want to stop there before I move on to the next part of what I wanted to say tonight and just see if people are comfortable with this or if you think we need to come back to this level of things and talk about the goals. And you don't have to decide that all tonight. There's time for this conversation, which is why I'm starting it right now. But obviously, we need to have a correspondence between the goals and what we do. And it's pretty clear. I mean, I think we can be honest. The part of this that's potentially controversial when you try to actually make it happen is how do you provide housing that's affordable for people who are working in basically in the tourism industry in Boulder, or to people whose incomes are not so high. And your comfort level with that is going to, and the rest of the community's comfort level with that is going to determine what we either can or can't do. So, and again, we don't necessarily have to say anything about that tonight, but we're going to have to tackle it eventually.
Okay.
I think I that, know. Oh.
Go ahead, Cookie.
Oh. I think that it is really important that we start at the beginning of this effort and involve everybody in the community that wants to sit at a table and eventually, if we can, all sit at a table and discuss this philosophically for one thing, but also realistically realizing we don't want to become like this place where old people come to die or whatever. We'd like some younger people here. And even though I've called up some people in the community, and there is a part of the community that is take care of your own damn self kind of thing, but there are also a whole bunch of people, a lot more people, that are really interested in making Boulder a permanent home. And that's why I think this is going to be so important to involve as many people as we can right at the beginning, and find out if there are ways to finance buying some land. You know, I mean, we totally do not know anything about this, so we'll be leaning on you pretty heavily, Lee.
Okay. Anybody else?
Well, I guess that's my comment too, is with the information that you're going to be helping us with, do we take that like we've done the table of uses and the general plan and work it through committees and talk to citizens? Is that a place to start?
Well, I think the key word that Cookie used was philosophical. Okay, and we all, you know, everybody's smiling, and appropriately so, because this gets into philosophy very quickly. And so I believe that I mean, you could say, hey, Lee, we don't want to deal with this, right? That's an option you have. And I will say, okay. If you want to deal with it, then I think that Cookie is right and it has to go out for what is kind of a philosophical conversation in the community. Because any of the specific things that we do in a small place like Boulder with the resources that you guys have are going to be hard. And some things that we might like to do just aren't going to happen in Boulder. It's not going to happen, at least anytime soon. And so before we get into what are we going to do in any very specific way, I think we need to say, okay, are the people of the community with us? Are they skeptical? Are they against us? You know, what level of support might there be for the things that we'd have to do?
Well, and isn't that what happens in a community as far as how far the community itself goes into what they create for low income and that type of housing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because every community is different, right, as far as how they approach helping people.
Right. Well,
is
and
that,
well, I that's in one sense, that's the whole question, is how do you approach helping people? Okay. And I'm going to give you a list of things here in just a second that we will probably end up talking about, some of which probably will work or at least could work, some of which might just not work. But I think you need to see the whole list, right? And so, but I think before we ever get to these specifics, this more than anything else that we could talk about, you got to go back to the goal and say, okay, are these goals, the way they're expressed in the general plan, really what people want?
Okay.
Right. My two cents is yes, philosophically is really important first. There's so many unanswered questions. Do the young people here really want what the people who might have the means to buy land have to offer, you know, is a question. There's so much to look at. What do they want? What do the people actually need, rather than a top-down idea that hasn't been based in the actual need of the town? So yeah, philosophical discussion. I don't know what that looks like, but that needs to start.
Let's take one more step here. So, you know, I got to move my thing. You know, are we serious about affordability? If we are, then let's talk about what is and is not possible, or may not be possible. The first thing is that in a place like Boulder, and in many, many other places, the market is not going to take care of this problem by itself. It really can't structurally. You don't have a big building industry. You don't have a lot of land available that's already subdivided, that already has infrastructure. There isn't a solution here where this just works itself out. Okay. That's not going to happen. So then there are things that you can do. One of the things you can do that was mentioned is to write down the cost of land. Another thing you could do in a lot of communities is write down the cost of infrastructure. If Boulder had, for example, a sewer system and you said, well, we will write off the cost of connection, that would lower the price of a home, right? Well, in Boulder, we have so little infrastructure, this isn't going to really be a strategy, right? No way to play that one. You can write down the cost of construction, and some programs like, you know, the Farm Home Agency's self-help housing program could be used maybe to help write down the cost of construction for people who qualify for that. A thing you can do that's small but can help people is write down the cost of the transaction. You know, there are housing trusts that pay people's closing costs. And closing costs these days are several thousand dollars, right? So that helps. And again, you get into public programs like self-help. If you're going to do very much of this, you probably can't do it within the framework of Boulder Town government. You're probably going to have to create a land and housing trust to address these issues in Boulder. So that would be a new not-for-profit organization that focused on these needs in Boulder. And, you know, we can, if the philosophical stance is, hey, let's try to help people, then we go down this list and say, okay, could we buy some land and write off the cost? We can't do much with infrastructure in Boulder at this point in time. Can we find a way to get them into self-help or some other program that helps with construction costs? Could we find a funder who would let us write down the cost of transactions? Okay. Now, the big thing, going one more slide here, that really people are going to talk about with the Planning Commission, and the big thing that happened with the recent controversy and that is in the subdivision regulations that we have to talk about, is what do you do with the regulations to help affordability? And, you know, the technique that's in the subdivision regulations and that planners and planning commissions everywhere try to use is to somehow combine getting some open space and some affordability by changing the density of housing that's allowed. And I think you all know what the shape of that debate in Boulder would look like. There are going to be people who say that the prevailing 5-acre lots are good, that that's the atmosphere of Boulder that they want to have, right? There are other people who are going to say, well, 5 acres is not affordable. You can't promise to build an affordable unit if you have to buy 5 acres. We need to somehow change the number of units per acre in order to address affordability. And how do we do that? And where do we do that? Get to be really interesting conversations. And there's been some evolution on this already. We need to look at what the existing zoning districts and subdivisions say, but I can tell you right now that we're going to end up changing those things if we do anything about this at all, right? And so we don't need to be too attached to the exact existing language. We need to be attached to good ideas. Okay. And deal with it that way. So,
yep.
And the first part of the philosophical discussion is that people are going to focus on the regulations, right? That's what is going to get people excited. That's what people were excited about with this recent housing proposal, right? We've got to step back from the regulations and talk about what the other pieces of the puzzle are. Okay. So that we have a holistic view of it. We understand not precisely how the pieces fit together, but we understand what the pieces could be and say, okay, if you're going to try to move homes closer together, I try to avoid the word clustering. I always call it open space development and emphasize the open space you get rather than the density of the housing. If you're going to do that, then you still aren't going to be affordable unless you can do some of these other things. And so why would you change the density if you still can't make homes affordable? Right? There's no reason, really, that I can think of in Boulder's case, at least, to say, hey, we'll change the regulations if we can't use some of these other tools to say, we'll change the regulations and do a couple of other things to actually provide homes that people could hope to afford to rent or buy.
Right. And I have to say that, I mean, that begs the question and definition of what is affordable.
Well, we'll get to that. And the answer is, you know, I think we all know that the answer is tough for a lot of people. But no matter what the exact number is, all these techniques could be used, right? And the regulations could be changed. And again, we don't want to change the regulations if we can't meet a good number, right? If the cost of a housing unit has to drop to, I don't know what in Boulder, $200,000, and we can't make that happen by changing the regulations or using these other techniques, then why incur a giant controversy by changing things? And I also think that there was a good point made about, Matt made it, about what do people want? And I would be interested to know, and I think this is why we have to go out to the public at some point relatively soon, I would be interested to know about the people that we're talking about in Boulder, people who work for themselves, maybe some of them, people who work in the tourist industry, you know, do they want a 1500 foot single family home? Do they want an attached unit where some maintenance and so on is provided? Do they want a studio apartment that's cheap to rent? Because the way we apply these tools and the way that we fiddle with the regulations is going to be drastically different depending upon those choices. And I, as you watch housing evolve all over the whole country right now, and I mean, this issue in Boulder is, it's happening right around me here where I am, in the same way. It's just that the community is a little larger. What we're seeing here is that the people who are moving in, the young people who are moving in, are a lot more interested in going hiking than they are in cleaning the grout and the tile. And that maybe they want a pretty simple basic unit. They don't want to go rehab an old home, not a big issue in Boulder because there aren't that many to rehab. They want, you know, probably an attached unit where somebody else mows the lawn. And I don't know what the answer to those questions in Boulder would be. I don't think I even want to guess. You guys are better equipped to guess than I am. But
I don't know if you guys remember this. Matt, you might have been there when Elisa and Locke were on the Planning Commission. And she held a meeting, an open meeting for the community. And I think there was between 25 and 30 people there. And every single person was given a chance to speak on what they wanted to see for housing. And I swear, every single person had a different answer. It was mind-boggling. So I get that totally, Lee, as far as what you're saying too. And it's a huge subject.
Well, the way it came up most recently in the form of this proposed subdivision, and I'm not criticizing either the subdivision or the people who opposed it, okay? I'm just saying the reality is that people did not agree.
Yes.
The reality is that they were presented with one particular way of making this work. And we don't really know, at least I don't think we know, who would have been interested in those homes. We know that they weren't willing to guarantee that they stay affordable, really. And that's a question that has to be answered. You know, if we find a way to write down the cost of things, then what do we as the community get back? Well, what we get back is a guarantee. Okay, if we wrote down the land for you, then you guarantee us that those homes will remain affordable. That's pretty clear, but we have to get to that point before. I mean, and that's actually pretty easy. It's a contractual relationship. You write a contract. But it strikes me that we should have this conversation with more of the Planning Commission present one more time. And then to me, the first question, and you guys can agree or disagree with this, we can figure out the path we want to take. I think the first question is, how do we go out to the public and say, look, and we just are honest. We say, look, this is going to be controversial. This is a big issue for a teeny town. It's bound to be controversial with a lot of people. There are a whole bunch of different ways to approach this, a whole bunch of different variations on the theme. We don't know what to do until we understand what people think they want and need, what people think would work for their employees who are there. You know, the employers need to be involved in this conversation. And I think that you would have to decide what the best way to have a public conversation would be, and then make a really determined effort to get everybody in the room for that conversation.
Well, I find it interesting too, because you don't live here, and you're right. There was a lot of questions that were answered in that last subdivision. There was a lot of information that came out. There were several people that were interested in that subdivision as far as the beginning of it. And I think we did learn a lot from that subdivision as far as what some people wanted and what some people didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that, Matt? Cookie?
I think,
don't you think that, I mean, just by that subdivision coming up, that we saw something just from that subdivision that we can go forward with?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I also think that, when we bring these conversations up, we can use this list that, Lee has, but also try to customize it and think of it in terms of Boulder. Like, some of the seasonal workers that come to town would, you know, maybe like some housing, but there's a lot of second or third generation people that are living here just by the skin of their teeth that, I mean, they're very willing to commit to housing and realize that a first house is different than maybe the final house that you get. And all those things, I think, need to be discussed as well. But also, the whole cost of land here, I'm wondering, Lee, if you just know, I mean, there's no reason to even go too far if there is no program that can help a community like ours to buy land.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're just bringing this up with there's no place to go.
Well, and we live in a state right now where the cost of living is just going up and up and up, the whole state.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much. And one brief thing, and you know, like Cookie's saying, how do you have affordable housing when you have an overpriced land market? I think to me, that's almost impossible. But there are other things to consider. We've passed an ADU ordinance, so there's a temporary measure if primary owners so decide to provide long-term rentals, you know, and hopefully that could be affordable or a step to give some elbow room. No one's really mentioned that we did it now 2 years ago, or, you know, followed up on that piece.
Right.
And so that's one thing I think about.
You have that piece in place. The other piece you put in place that may not seem as obvious is that you've got some limitations on short-term rentals. If you let the short-term rental market run wild, there might not be any place left for people to live. I mean,
right. We're discussing that tonight.
You know, and I can tell you, you know, I've been doing some work with the village of Lake Placid, you know, of Olympic fame. They have reached the point where they've lost 20% or more of their housing units to short-term rentals.
Oh, God.
And it's changing the fabric of the community. The school population the graph of the school population goes almost straight down. Okay, Lake Placid, 2,000, 2,500 people. It's not a big place. It's bigger than Boulder, but it's not really a big place. And
yeah.
I mean, the school enrollment is literally just bombing because people who have kids normally cannot afford the high-end units. And if all the middle housing units are converted to short-term rentals, where would they live?
Yeah.
So you guys have done some things that are good already. You've addressed some pieces of this. I think we did another small thing to address it in the commercial standards we wrote, which was we made it really clear that you can combine a housing unit into a business. And so there can be housing for managers or owners or employees that will be approved as part of a commercial project. And that
good
way,
point.
You know, the cost of that housing gets mixed in with what you expect to make on the commercial, and maybe it's doable to provide housing that way in a way that you wouldn't otherwise. So none of the things that we're talking about here, the ADUs, the short-term rentals, or the employee housing, none of them are like a silver bullet at all. But every one of them has the potential to help. And so we need to think about all those things that have a potential to help. And there may be a couple of other things we could do, although you guys really have done a good job of addressing the major questions. You know, it occurred to me that with seasonal workers, maybe we need a nice RV park where somebody could tow in a trailer. I mean, when I worked in Yellowstone, I lived in my trailer.
Yeah.
You know, yep. And the Park Service has its own employee trailer courts. And
yeah.
I parked my trailer and I paid them, what, $162 a month. It was a screaming deal. But of course, I was working pretty hard. But nonetheless, that was one of the ways that they could deal with. And of course, Yellowstone has to because it's so remote. But maybe, you know, when we look at the RV, the campground regulations, we want to make sure that it's possible for somebody to provide some trailer spaces for seasonal workers. That might be a way to deal with it in the right location, the right way. But I think that what I wanted to do tonight was prime the pump and hear what you guys had to say. And I've heard, and I like the nature of this conversation. And I guess my suggestion would be that we come back in a month with the goal of rehashing as much of this as we need to, and of trying to come up with a strategy for how to talk to people about it in the fairly near future.
Yep. Yeah, I think that sounds good. I think that sounds good.
Well, I need to let you guys get on with your hearing.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Lee.
Well, thank you all. And I will probably, I don't know. I want to wait and do these other standards like the campgrounds one at a time.
Yes.
So I probably won't send you anything on guest ranches or anything else. We'll just get this one done and then move on to the next one.
Okay.
And the housing, I don't think I need to send you guys anything more at the moment. I think we need to get back and talk about how to have the community conversation about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for all your help.
Oh, hey, I enjoy doing this. You guys have a good hearing, and I will we'll talk to you soon.
Wait. Could you just send me the slides that you'd put up?
Oh, absolutely. I'll send you this PowerPoint.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yep. All righty. I will see you guys in a month.
Okay.
Okay, so what we did last month, for the public hearing and what they did for the town council last week was before we actually open the public hearing for public comment, we're going to open up to the public any questions that they may have for the codification of Boulder ordinances. So I'm going to open it up, Peg, if anyone has any questions.
Michaela, I'm not sure. Yeah, Michaela is here too. If anyone has any questions on the codification of our Boulder ordinances, now is the time for you to ask questions, and we will try to answer them for you.
Not seen anything yet. If you're on, no one's on phone either, so you know how to raise your hand if you're on screen, correct? I'm not seeing any questions, Colleen.
Okay. We don't have a great big audience either, so I don't want to really wait too long. Okay, so then I would like to have a motion to open the public hearing for comments on the codification of Boulder ordinances. Matt,
yeah,
Cookie?
A motion to open up the public meeting on the codification of the Boulder ordinances. Someone want to second that?
I second that, Matt.
All in favor? Oh, do we have to vote that way?
Yeah.
Yeah, all in favor, yeah. Matt, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Okay, so now we will take any comments on the codification of the Boulder ordinances from the public.
If you'd like to unmute yourself and just yell, we can do that too. I don't see any hands up. Hopefully everyone knows how to unmute.
Yeah, I...
And raise their hands. Wave. Nothing. No.
Yeah.
Comments.
Okay.
Can I add, there was a written comment or a question actually that during this interim week when I'd asked for comments in the public notice, and we did get a written question asking a few things by Josh Ellis, and we supplied him with a 2-page explanation that Curtis had written out, which is also posted on the website, and that satisfied his questions completely. So hopefully that's the case for all you guys that don't have questions, but I just want you to know there was one comment and question.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, do I hear a motion on closing the public hearing?
I'll make a motion to close the public hearing on codification of Boulder ordinances.
And I second that.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Okay, so now the three of us can now, or whoever wants to talk about the action on the codification. Matt or Cookie, do either of you have any comments?
None here.
None here.
Okay, so then so what I'm going to do right now is I, Colleen Thompson, move that the Planning Commission recommend that the Town Council adopt the codification of Boulder ordinances as they were brought to the hearing before us tonight, which is March 11th, 2021.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye, Cookie Shouse.
Aye.
Okay. I, Colleen Thompson.
Aye, Cookie Shouse.
Yeah.
Did you hear me?
Peg? Yeah. Okay. This is amazing. I'm really grateful for this new document that we have. I printed it off myself. Cookie has a copy. I've gone through it. I told Curtis that it was like a good book to read. It was very well written. The work that went through this, into this, all the people that contributed to this, I'm so grateful that we have this. And that was very smooth, and I'm really happy. I want to get up and jump up and down, actually. So we're going to talk about the RSTR revisions to be considered. So I have to be really honest. I didn't, Matt, at first read. I read the information as it came in. I saw your question to Curtis. I saw Curtis write a response back. I know that it went on for a couple of responses, but today I printed the whole thing out and I read the whole thing, and I have to agree with you, Matt. And I think that as I was reading it, I highlighted a couple of things. And one of them was that I didn't really want to bring it up to Lee because I wanted, but I'm wondering if we do want to go to Lee. As I was reading through the minutes, I started remembering things because I didn't actually read the minutes as I went through your emails. I printed the whole thing out, and Cookie has even made a comment in this. I don't know if you have been looking at this, Cookie, the RSTR question that Matt has about the date that we did this.
Right.
And so I don't know, Cookie, you have a comment in there. And so I'm not really sure how to go about this. When I was reading in the new ordinances that were codified, it's on page 148. It's D, limitations on number and type of RSTs allowed. It says, for purposes of this chapter, the town limits are divided into Upper Boulder, Middle Boulder, and Lower Boulder. Each of these three areas should be allowed a maximum number of CUPs under this chapter. And I think there should be a comma put there, as of the date.
Okay.
And so that's kind of my comment. I don't know how to do this. I don't know. So that's my comment, Matt.
I have a couple proposals. And okay. So, first off, the original intent of the PC, in my mind, and I know not everyone's here, was to cap the number of Airbnbs on the simple fact that we realized we were allowing a certain commercial use within residential zones. And right now, as it sits, the more people that buy land in Boulder, which already increases the density in our residential areas, the more Airbnbs are possible. And the funny thing about that is the land doesn't get bigger, right? So it's a loophole, and I think it's not the original intent, really. And even as Lee said, there's things to consider. You know, I know things got messed up because Perry was sort of moving around and then, you know, I'll take the blame for not, you know, reading the final draft and catching that. But I'm proposing we need to amend it. And there's a couple of ways we could amend it. And so, you know, part of us was waiting for the awesome work that Michaela did in getting so we knew what we had to deal with, because we knew breaking into three pieces was going to be not equitable. So we'd come up with the percent on that. And so I propose, and I haven't run the numbers, but I think this is what we need to do, that we come up with a cap, a specific number for each zone based on the percentage that we have now. And we just write that number in, and then that would be our amendment to, you know, and then it has to go through public hearing in the PC, then passed the TC, and so on. But at this point, it would put, you know, a bookend on our work that doesn't leave a hole in the end. And in a way, you know, if the need and the public decide that they want more Airbnbs, then the PC that's existing at that time can, you know, amend it that way. But it would be much harder to backtrack as we're doing now. And I just think that's a very dangerous place to be in. So.
Well, and I appreciate you saying what you've just said, because I remember as I started reading this and I have started thinking about it more and looking at the minutes, I think Josie was there, and it's unfortunate that she, because the three of us were there. I know Cookie was there at a meeting, but as I'm reading this, I do remember that that was what our intent was.
Yeah.
I would like to go and have Lee look at this and maybe tell us how that we can do that.
I would like to, you know, just make a proposal to go forward with an amendment and cap the limit in upper, middle, and lower Boulder at 15% as of when the ordinance passed. And we'd have to figure out that number.
I would like to have Josie here. I'm sure she would. I don't want to really vote on anything tonight. I would like to have her here also, because I think she remembers.
Well,
and
I mean,
so you're not really proposing that we do anything tonight, are you? Are you proposing that we do anything tonight?
It would be nice
Matt?
To get it done sooner, because there's a lot of work.
Well, I know that, but I also think we need to have it written right, or have it written so. And Lee's helped us write most of that. Josie, I mean, I'm agreeable to what you're saying. I don't want to make any real decisions tonight. Cookie, do you have any comments?
I also was kind of shocked in reading it, because I too had thought we had put a cap on it. I think by the fact that we're talking about it and our intent, we're showing our intent to put a cap on it, is a good thing. It would be nice if Josie and Haley were here. But I don't have a problem with moving this forward, actually. I agree with Matt that we really do have to make a move on it, because there are there's a lot of development that is going to come down the pike here pretty quick, and we need to get ahead of it. I don't know.
Okay, so Peg, so how do we move this? How do we go forward with this?
I would make a motion.
A recommendation.
A motion for a recommendation to amend the RSTR ordinance and cap the number in each section at 15% of the primary ownership at the time the ordinance was passed. We have to come up with a hard number for that, but we can do that. But I'm proposing that we vote on that to amend that now.
Excuse me, can I say something?
Yes.
Please.
Well, you have to have a public hearing for one thing.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, first.
You have to schedule it for a public hearing. So, and I can see the language that you're suggesting, and all you're suggesting is adding really three or four words, right?
Yeah.
As
the
of the
date.
As the effective date of the ordinance, yeah. Okay. I do want to correct the record here because I spent a lot of time drafting this, and I have to take issue with your memories here. Perry, you guys started out with a hard number, and mm-hmm. it went kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
And then in March of 2019, Perry was very insistent, and you guys debated back and forth, and there was disagreement. But
yeah.
he said, no, we want to provide more opportunity and growth, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's why he came up with the 15%. If it had been a hard number as of the date, if that's the way the debate had been going, then we'd just use a hard number. Or we'd use 15% as a hard number, whatever. So it doesn't make any sense to use the 15% and the hard number. So he was there in March, and he was very forceful about what he wanted. And so that's kind of the way I wrote it. And then in April, when you guys considered it, that's the way it was written, because that's what I was told to do. And Perry was on the phone, and it was a little garbled and so on and so forth. And so then I'm not exactly sure, but I didn't pick up that you wanted it changed. And that was at the public hearing, what was before you at the public hearing. And so that's what you forwarded up to the Planning Commission. But then I saw in the minutes in April where Matt made that one statement. And I haven't gone back and listened to the record, but I thought, well, if that's what was supposed to happen, I totally didn't pick that up. That was already written back in March and then sent to you based on your whole conversation with Perry. Anyway, so anyway, that's the history of the way that came down. But an easy solution, if that's what you want to do, is add, you know, four or five words in there, and you can schedule it for a public hearing. And if that's your intent, that would certainly bring it back to a hard number.
And yeah, I would propose that, and then maybe we do a public hearing for the next month.
Okay. So what I was going to say is, yeah, because the agenda doesn't say you were going to vote on this, so it's nothing you can move forward to this town council. But
sorry, I just got the.
If you could, between Matt, between you and me, we just make sure we have the words of exactly what you want the ordinance to be changed to, and then
okay.
that can be brought up in a public hearing at the next meeting, and you guys vote on it then and move it forward.
That would be great.
And Curtis, I remember, and just like Matt said, with Perry being gone, there was a lot of confusion and a lot of things that we were trying to do at that point.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's anything that you did or anything. I think it's just a matter of, like Matt said, I didn't go back and read that hadn't been put in there. But I do believe that's what that intent was.
Yeah.
I would like to move forward on it. Thanks, Curtis.
It's what you want to do now that matters, you know. So let's just get the right date so you can propose it for the public hearing. So you just want to interlineate as of the date of passage, or as of the effective date of this ordinance.
Yeah, let me work with Peg on that and then get to you, Curtis, for the write-up, because I suppose that's what your position is.
Let's just make sure it's clear this time that this is what
you're exactly. Okay.
And Josie.
Pretty confusing. This ordinance went back and forth a lot.
Can I just say something? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Steve. The way I remember it coming to us as the town council, it came that way for two reasons. And One of them I remember is if you put a cap on, it was felt it would be too restrictive, and eventually, you know, the town might get sued over being too restrictive. That was one of the discussions I remember. And the other one was allowing people that have primary residence would have a way of making money. So it was an economic, those are the two factors I remember. It might be worth asking Lee about the restrictiveness. If you put a hard cap on it, is that too restrictive? That's all I need to say on that. That's just my memory of how it came to the town council.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with that too. And when you go back to Perry's comment on the 411 meeting, it says the language was put in the ADU ordinance with the assumption that RSTRs would be allowed at a later date, and that the intent was to make the ADUs more available for increased income for residents. That's what we started with, that's where we really wanted the town to go to, was the ADUs. And that's something that I really remember too. Not necessarily the RSTRs, but the ADUs. So anyway, that's my comment too. Anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, I think finally how Lee said at the end there that, you know, too many burgeoning RSTRs are actually gonna kill that affordable and long-term housing for others. So I think it's an important thing.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm hoping that I've been telling people it's going to be hard to use last year as a reference to most anything. I think we have to go back and skip to 2020 because everything was so convoluted that we want, you know, if you look back at 2019, that's when we're writing this and looking to a different future, which is still going to come about here soon, you know. So thank you all for your comments. Does anyone else have any more comments on this?
I just would like to say I'm looking forward to moving forward with it, with the cap. And unless there's some astronomical reason not to, like we could talk to Lee or whatever, between Matt's homework that he's done and Josie, they ought to get together. That'll be great to get together with Peg and put something on for next month.
Yeah.
Be sure and do that public hearing next month.
So those are things too, so we'll go to this next bullet point, which is to discuss our upcoming business. So we'll come back with Lee again. And we'll start at 6 o'clock with him, and then go ahead, Peg. Oh, you're muted. Muted.
Okay. 7 o'clock next time.
Unless
you take earlier work meeting with Lee, but your official meeting starts daylight savings time at 7 o'clock.
Okay. And then Matt, if you guys remember last year, we would start at 6 o'clock with Lee, go for an hour with him, and then go into our regular meeting. Is anyone interested in doing that? Or Matt, were you putting your thumbs up for 7?
For 7. No, I'm not interested in doing more.
Okay, let's go ahead and just start let's just do 7 o'clock and see where we get with that. So I'm okay with that. Okay, so then we have those two things on the agenda then, right?
Specifically with Lee, he wants you to do that homework that he sent with the RV parks and the conditional use.
Right.
And,
yeah.
He doesn't, I was kind of missing if he was going to send you guest ranch material between now and then, or?
No guest
he
ranch
said he
material.
Wasn't.
And I'll summarize the questions he came up and get it out to the PC by the end of the weekend, okay?
Okay, great. Yeah.
And Peg, I'll get a hold of you around the language as well.
Okay, great.
And Curtis.
And we didn't talk about the conditional use. Did we?
Well, that's one of the amendments that Curtis had listed that needed to happen. There's several things in the condition. I didn't read what he sent very carefully, so I'm not sure what all is there, but among things that need to be changed in the conditional use permit, since it's now quite the cornerstone for a lot of these development standards, one of the things has to do with notification of nearby landowners. The same language that's current in the subdivision ordinance will need to be added, just picked up and added to the conditional use. So it's a requirement that anyone applying for conditional use does supply the clerks with name and address of those nearby landowners to be notified of the pending development or request.
Was that the only change?
No, there's other stuff that he wrote in there. And like I said, I didn't read all of his changes.
Did you see that, Matt? The cookie?
No, I haven't. I haven't looked
so that
at
was
it.
A,
Sorry to
okay,
say.
Okay, so, that's so your, are we supposed to? Yeah, that's, so we'll just use it. So, okay. So that will be next week too.
Month, yeah.
Okay, and then will we be bringing up housing again with Lee?
It seemed as though he was asking.
We were going to come
with some ideas about how to communicate with the public and
we're gonna come up with a way.
So we need to include those in that first hour or so with Lee, but that's under his heading. Okay, and then the RSTR amendment. Okay,
and possibly Deer Ranch subdivision if the application is submitted and is complete.
I talked to Sean tonight and he kind of realized he might have dropped the ball a little. He had a few expectations and I told him he couldn't have any expectations as far as things moving forward, that everything that's happening right now that he really needed to, like he didn't come to us last week. He had 30 days, so he didn't come to us last month. And so anyway, he is going to keep moving forward and try to get all of us the information in the next couple of weeks, all of it, so we can all see it. And you too, Peg.
Okay, so he needs to file it with Michela and it needs to be.
I told him that too.
Sign it off. And then once the zoning administrator signs that is complete, then I ship it around to you guys, but you should have your 10 days to look at the packet. It's a regular one lot, presumably still. It still is a subdivision application. So there are requirements that he still has to meet.
Yeah. And he kind of admitted that he had dropped the ball. He had some assumptions and I told him also that Curtis is Michela that he really needs to talk to too, as far as Curtis moving her things to her. We'll probably see him next month.
And Michela is specifically this application. So yes.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Can I circle back to the RSTR for clarification? We want to have a public hearing if possible.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Just wanted to be clear.
Okay.
So will we have an amendment then? I mean, are we going to have something in writing so we can have?
Yes.
And you'll get that to us like, okay.
Matt and I will. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then, is that it then for the upcoming, for April 8th? Okay. So then, well, this, so it says discuss logistics for next meeting. And I think, Peg, do you want to talk about that? Or
well,
do you want me to?
You can.
Okay, so what's happening is because of restrictions lifting for COVID, next month, the town council will be having a meeting where we'll be in the building, masks. If you want to wear a mask, you can wear a mask. And we will also, okay, Michaela's.
Yeah, Michaela.
Okay, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then also there'll be Zoom.
Yes, so I'm working on getting, we got Meeting Owl Pro, which will allow us to still do what we're calling a hybrid meeting. So there will be Zoom and people in person. The masks are not optional. That will still be a must. We're going to set it up in the other room, the kitchen meeting room, and because we have the projector screen in there, so we can project and show the Zoom participants. And I'm going to try and tape it out so that all the chairs will be distanced. And then we'll leave like sides for couples to sit or family members, same household. And anyway, still working on it, but we're going to give it a go next month. That's the plan.
Wow.
And I'll add one thing. Let me add one thing to that. Right now, Garfield County is in a high transmission risk. If we continue to be in high transmission risk, we will do an electronic meeting. The hope is we will not be in that category, but that's where we're at now. And if that's the case, we will continue to do Zoom until we're out of that category.
So we'll basically follow what? We'll follow what you guys do, the town council.
A little bit your choice on that, because of the people that you have that may or may not be able to get vaccinated. But we are planning to move ahead as town council in doing it based on who we are, I guess, is the way to say it.
Okay.
So
we're go ahead, Peg.
I was
go ahead.
Depending on what you want to do, I mean, we can continue doing Zoom and give it another month. I just wanted to let you know that I'm happy to set you up if you want to do a hybrid meeting in what Steve and Michelle are describing. And Michelle said that I can use Judy's office. I won't be sitting with you. I'll be sitting in a separate place, either at home or in the office. So I'll set it up for you if you want to do it that way, but I'm not going to sit there. So just so you know.
Does anybody?
I'll be Zooming from home, just so you guys know.
Okay, do you have any comments on this?
Well, I've had my... I'm good going with just Zoom again. If it would be easier to just do one more pass at Zoom, maybe we'll all have our immunizations by then and it'll be easy. But I don't know about this hybrid thing.
So can we... choose to do Zoom, Peg, next week? Just go all Zoom?
Yes. Steve said he could write us a permission slip.
Matt, how do you feel about that?
Great. Perfect.
Okay. So maybe because I didn't realize that the transmission had gone up in Garfield County, that is for only 4 weeks away. So maybe we should... maybe we should just do a Zoom meeting as it stands for one more month and let the town council play with the hybrid.
Yeah.
Hey, don't get me wrong. We want everyone to be safe. It's not to encourage, you know, it's just to allow people to start coming back together. Yeah. There's a certain benefit to being in person. But by no means is this to try and get a high transmission rate or to make anyone feel unsafe. I mean, it's going to be up to the council members whether they want to be in person. And, you know, the whole thing is still about let's get well and better before we go back into our old habits.
Well, everybody knows that I want to have a good meeting. I mean, that I want to have a real meeting in that building where we're sitting next to each other. But I've also waited for a whole year, and I'm willing to wait another month when it comes right down to it. You know, so I'm game for that one more. I'm game for another month. So, and then, so do we, the last thing we have then is final public comments. Does anyone have any, we'll open it up. Does anyone have any public comments? Peg?
I'm not seeing anybody else's hand raised right now. My comment to you guys was, if you haven't already, get your conflict of interest form submitted to Judy or Michaela.
Oh.
Cookie.
Okay.
Okay. Just get them signed electronically or otherwise, however you want to do it. Just turn them in.
Oh.
On file.
Okay.
Thank
you.
I did have one comment. Maybe it's kind of a question. Steve, there was a thing on our clerk's meeting to be discussed at Planning Commission. Do you want me to just list those items now or wait till next month?
It can wait. It was just stuff that came into me, but I think you have enough to do without adding any anxiety unless you want to go ahead and tell them what's down the line. But I think you have enough on your plate.
Yeah, I can just email them and say, I mean, this is what came out of the clerk's meeting. And as I'm remembering, this came off your action list from the community group meeting. So is that one?
Yeah, several of those were off our action item list that was generated as part of the general plan redo.
Right.
If you remember, Josie put together an action plan list. And I just went through that list and wrote down a few things that were on there that relate to maybe things that we're heading into. So share it as you want, just so people maybe remember that.
Yeah, just kind of to put it on your plate so it doesn't fall off the back end someplace. Okay.
Okay, so
are you going to email that then, Peg?
Oh, I will, yeah. And if you want to put it at the next meeting, you know, you guys can do that, but it's just, I'll just send the email to you guys. Just think for the future. Some you already are, so, you know, stuff that came off that list.
Okay. I don't see any final public comments.
No.
So I will make a motion that we close the Boulder Town Planning Commission meeting.
I'll second that. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.